Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again on Queensberry Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. Be joined here shortly by James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. Sorry about that delay there. Had a little bit of a problem connecting in for some reason, but we're here now, and we're definitely here to fawn all over Gennady Golovkin all day today. In fact, speaking of fawning all over Golovkin, Mr. Foley.
Mr. Connor.
Sorry
sir,
about that.
How
there.
Are you?
Had an issue
connecting
for whatever reason. I don't fucking know, man. Come on. Give me a break.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm here now. That's what's important.
That's right, man. So today is the day that we're pretty much all over Gennady Golovkin. You know, we pretty much are all the time anyway. But extra dose today after that showing against Daniel Gill. What of it, man?
Well, you know, I mean, it was awesome. And Golovkin is the man, like we always say. You know, it's just frustrating. I mean, I think Gill's a really good fighter. But, you know, I'm ready for Golovkin to really get in there with somebody, you know, either an elite fighter or, you know, one of the big-name pay-per-view guys. And it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. I mean, there's only a few options there, and that's kind of the downside of this is, you know, Golovkin's 32. If he was 25, we could say, oh, he's got plenty of time to, you know, develop and eventually he'll get there. But, you know, the clock's ticking, and, I mean, I just would really love to see him in a fight with somebody who can, you know, compare. I mean, just an equal. And I think Gill has a ton of heart. He's a good fighter. He's been a solid guy and, you know, one of the best middleweights for a few years. But we all knew that, you know, during Sergio Martinez's reign, I mean, there was a very steep drop-off from the champion to the rest of the division. And it's kind of a similar situation now. And, in terms of Golovkin and everyone else in the rest of the division, although the champion is Cotto, but... So, you know, it was another awesome performance. He looked amazing, and, you know, I just would like to see him in a more competitive fight, but I struggle to think what that could be at middleweight.
Well, number one, like you said, it's frustrating, but I have to feel bad for the guy on a few different levels because, one, I think that I don't think that he has a whole shitload of detractors or haters or anything like that. He'd probably have to be a little bit more popular to get to that point. However, that said, there's still some kind of lingering doubt because he hasn't been able to get a real marquee type of win, a real, you know, a win that's really eye-opening or against a really top elite level type of fighter. And unfortunately, that win doesn't even really exist on the horizon that we're looking at right now. It's unlikely that he's ever going to get in with Peter Quillen. You know, if I'm Miguel Cotto, I'm definitely, if I have somebody like Canelo on the table, somebody like potentially Floyd and a year from now, why the fuck would I want to be fighting Gennady Golovkin? So, you know, it just really sucks for him because a lot of us feel as though give him these opportunities and he's going to potentially, you know, totally fucking obliterate these guys. So it's frustrating to see, you know, that possibility, that potential, just slide right by.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not really fair. I mean, I don't think he really has much more to prove at middleweight other than it would be nice if he could compete for the lineal championship. I mean, he's clearly the number one contender, and you know, that would obviously be a great notch on his belt. But outside of that, you know, and honestly, man, I mean, all respect to Miguel Cotto. I think he's, you know, been a great fighter. I think he's still very good. I think he'll be competitive against Canelo. I think, you know, even against Floyd, he gave him a good fight. But, I don't need to see Golovkin and Cotto just to prove that Golovkin can beat Cotto, because I'm pretty 99% sure of that, stylistically and everything else. I mean, I don't need to see it for that reason. You know, it's really only just because I think Golovkin deserves the opportunity to have that on his mantle to say he's a, you know, legitimate champion at middleweight. But outside of that, I mean, all of the best fights for him are up at 168, and that's it sucks that that's the way that it is, but he's just too big of a threat. You know, the money fight, I mean, maybe I can see some scenario where Canelo becomes the middleweight champion and gives Golovkin a fight, because if Oscar takes Canelo back to HBO and gets him in with those guys, it'll be a huge fight. I mean, Golovkin's profile is rising. He's not a complete nobody anymore. He just headlined a show at Madison Square Garden with, you know, 8,500 people. That's a pretty good number. There's not many guys who can do that, and I think he's getting more and more buzz. So there's a possibility of that, but, I mean, I do think that the real path for him, and I just think he needs to make these things happen sooner rather than later because of his age. You know, I think he's got to go to 68 and try to get in there, whether it's even a guy like Chavez Jr., but, you know, particularly someone like Carl Froch would be just a perfect fight for him. And if he could beat Froch, you know, especially in the fashion that he's beaten other opponents, I mean, if he could knock out Froch and then launch into the fight with Andre Ward, to me, that's, you know, that's his real path to greatness. And I think popularity will come with that. You know, I think hanging around at middleweight, hoping that Cotto or Canelo or somebody eventually gives him a fight, well, you know, meanwhile, he's going to fight guys like Soleiman and those guys. I don't know. Does his profile get bigger than it is now, fighting Soleiman and fighting those guys? Probably not. But if he goes to 68, but still maybe shows up for those fights in the low 160s, you know, maybe he gives himself an option to make it, get his profile bigger, you know, become great. I mean, if he beats Froch and beats Andre Ward at 68, I know I'm, like, getting ahead of myself here, but, you know, I mean, that's a genuine, like, we start talking about Golovkin as a, you know, real top pound-for-pound guy, and the way, you know, Andre Ward's become such a darling of all the, you know, boxing guys and everything, I mean, you know, you might even start talking about Golovkin as a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, he's not that many fights away from achieving that real type of greatness, and I think those opponents are north of middleweight. But if he stays low, you know, that just makes a fight maybe down the road with Canelo, he can come back to 160 and try to win the championship. But it sucks because right now it does look like he's probably going to be shut out of that for at least, you know, a year, 2 years.
Well, it basically sounds like you're getting into the hashtag purist end of the argument there, James, and we don't really do that on this show. We're not into that type of shit.
My favorite performance of the year was Lara against Canelo.
Oh, yeah. No, that's best ever. Top 38. You know, after the fight, Gennady Golovkin, you know, he issued a public apology to Nagasaki, Chernobyl, Atlantis, Randy Quaid's acting career. You know, he basically was responsible for wiping them all off the map with just jabs. So, James, when you have punching power like that, Sarah Palin basically petitioned the Westboro Baptist Church to picket your sparring sessions. It's true. So who's going to be the fighter to stop him? Who's going to be the one to stop Gennady Golovkin?
Maybe two clones of Gennady Golovkin.
Damn.
But I don't know, dude. Like, you know, I mean, I think the fighter in that weight class that I think most people favor against Golovkin is Andre Ward. Now, I mean, I don't think Golovkin necessarily should just try to jump right into that fight, but if he validates himself by beating Froch, who's clearly become the number two guy at 168, I'm not going to go in there and say I think Andre Ward's going to outbox Golovkin, you know, or whatever, manhandle Golovkin the way that he did with those guys, because I think, honestly, man, I think Golovkin's better than Froch. I think he's better than Mikel Kessler. You know, I mean, I think he's obviously he hasn't proven himself against top opponents, but I favor Golovkin to beat everybody from 154 to 168. I know it's crazy, but whatever. So I think of any of those guys, the guy who has the most potential to beat him probably is Andre Ward when you factor in the size and style and, you know, how effective Ward's been at neutralizing opponents. But I don't think he's fought anybody on the level of Golovkin in terms of, you know, just downright skill and particularly punching power.
Yeah, I have to agree. And, I mean, I'm not entirely sure who's going to be the one to really, you know, be the first to beat him or even just, you know, teach him a lesson or something. But, yeah, if I'm putting my money on anybody, it's probably Andre Ward. But, I mean, you know, as far as this last weekend goes, I'm not even sure if you got a chance to, like, catch up on the show from last week. But even if you didn't, it was probably the same type of thing that most people were saying. Daniel Gill, he's a tough fighter. He's a solid guy. He has a busy style. He previously appeared to be durable. So either Golovkin's power is just that kind of like physics defying, or Gill just hadn't really gotten his chin touched. I don't know. But, you know, Golovkin literally flattened the guy like a millisecond after taking Gill's probably his best shot of the night. So now we've got two top 10 middleweights that Golovkin has not only beaten but completely trashed like they were nothing. And I guess I should probably say, oh, where did you get the number top 10? I looked, you know, I had to look just because I don't know who the fuck is rated what at middleweight. And I looked at both the, you know, Transnational Boxing Rankings Board and Ring just to kind of see if they had, you know, different guys. And no, they had different order, but the exact same fighters. Anyway, two top 10 fighters that he's...
Did you check King Fight Freaks rankings?
Well, that, and then I went to BoxRec and I basically fed all the numbers into some type of matrix and spat it out like a little, like Chinese, you know, fucking fortune cookie.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm just basically getting a rough, roughly ascertain the numbers. But, yeah, that's regardless, it's two guys that are considered top 10 or top 10-ish that he totally just walked through. And politics aside, you know, like, nobody else at middleweight has done that to two, like, fellow top 10 type of guys. The only other person would maybe have an argument is Martin Murray, and that's if you factor in that he, you know, deserved both of the Martinez and Cerm fights. You know, maybe he did, but otherwise, you know, there's no other guys like this. The point is that Golovkin is doing precisely what he, you know, quote unquote, is supposed to do. Like, you know, if a champion won't fight you, fuck you, pay me. Other fighters have belts, fuck you, pay me. Oh, they're going to all fight each other and leave you in the dust? Fuck you, pay me, you know? So if he's going to be aiming at all the other guys that have belts and shit and calling them out by name, you know, either they fight him or they don't. So, yeah, I mean, basically what I'm saying is that I don't even understand how people can really not like this dude. Inside the ring, he's doing what he's supposed to. Outside the ring, he's hilarious. What's the problem?
No idea. You know, dude, the other amazing thing is, like, the only fighter who, in my memory, who looked like he even wanted to be in the ring with Golovkin was Gabe Rosado. You know, I mean, like you said, he's fought the top 10 guys, Macklin and Gill, and I mean, I have respect for both guys, but neither of them looked like they wanted to be there. You know, it was like very quickly in both fights, they became really defensive, really, you know. And I mean, in Gill's defense, you know, I thought, I mean, the whole way that first round where he gets looped up and tripped by the camera guy and the things like around his ankle, and then it goes an extra minute.
Christ.
I mean, you know, you want a guy to get comfortable in a situation against an incredibly dangerous opponent. That's not the way to do it. So I did feel
that
somewhat
was so
bad.
Weak, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally fucked. You put him on the canvas, but you basically lasso the guy's ankle, and then they let the round go for another like 45 seconds or minute. It, you know, that right off the bat definitely fucked Gill. But it's just amazing, man. It's like none of these guys, other than Rosado, I haven't seen anybody really making an earnest effort to beat Golovkin even, you know, because it's like as soon as they start being stalked by him and taste his power or whatever, it just seems like, you know, they back away. And I mean, I think that's what, you know, the one guy you mentioned that, like, I actually would be interested in seeing him fight is Martin Murray. Not because I think that Murray would really even stand a chance to beat him, but Murray's, I think, a little bit bigger middleweight. He definitely seems more durable. He's probably, you know, still riding that confidence of giving Sergio a really good fight, although, you know, where was Sergio at after the Chavez fight? It's always kind of going to be a mystery. you know, Murray's an opponent. I wouldn't mind seeing seeing Golovkin, you know. But, at this point, it's like, I don't even really have that much interest. He could fight everyone in the top 10. I mean, maybe Peter Quillen, because that would be kind of a cool, like, you know, I know Golovkin's not top rank, but it's kind of like a weird Cold War breaker, you know, two guys on different networks. Quillen's undefeated, but I'd like to see Quillen. You know, Quillen looked great a couple fights ago, and then he hasn't looked so good. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that fight's not as hot as it would have been even like a year ago. So until somebody else in the middleweight division does something really, you know, eye-opening, those fights aren't even that compelling. You know, and I think Golovkin's at that point. He's clearly separated himself from the pack at middleweight. The Cotto thing is almost like an asterisk to me, because is he even a middleweight? He had one fight in the division. He fought a clearly diminished version of Martinez. You know, do we even consider him a mid? I mean, he's probably going to, like you said, you know, be looking down for bigger money fights. But aside from that, you know, Golovkin's just so far ahead of the pack there that I just have no interest, and I think he's ready to step up to a bigger level. And I think, you know, the move, it sucks that he has to, you know, he doesn't have to, but I think that his career would benefit going up to 168 and fighting those guys. And I don't rule him out of, or, you know, fight a softer guy at 68 and see how it feels fighting a bigger guy. I mean, it's a significant weight difference. You know, Golovkin says he can make 154, so, you know, you add another 8 pounds on top of the middleweight limit. These are bigger guys for sure, but, you know, I think he has the skills and the size to be able to compete there and to beat those guys. And if he takes a semi-reasonable fight to start up there, and doesn't feel good about it, he can go back down.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as, like, the middleweight stuff, it's kind of, I mean, there are a couple guys there. Obviously, I'd like to see him, just like with Martinez, like when we talked about Martinez-Golovkin and stuff like that, I would have liked to see a clean switchover. The Cotto thing was a surprise to most people, at least the way that it went down. So, yeah, if it were going to be that way, I would prefer him to actually beat Cotto and blah, blah, blah. But the point is that, you know, aside from maybe Peter Quillen, who in terms of his physicality and style might pose some issues for Golovkin, but I think ultimately would probably get knocked out too. I don't think super highly of him, but regardless, aside from a couple of fights at middleweight, yeah, no, you're right. There is nothing really there that people are, you know, slamming their fists on the table demanding. I don't know that, you know, if Canelo is being given issues by Erislandi Lada, or if he's being given issues by, you know, a couple other fighters that, in my opinion, just aren't on Golovkin's level, either size-wise in terms of power and also Golovkin's a good boxer, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, I'm slobbering all over his Johnson right now. Point is, I agree with you.
No shame in that.
At this point, what's that?
No shame. If you're going to slobber over Johnson, it might as well be Golovkin.
It might as well be his. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing him move up. I thought that when the ideas of Frotch Golovkin and Chavez Jr. Golovkin were floated around, I was like, yes, give me those. Yes, fucking A. A guy who can punch from, you know, the tip of his toes to the top of his head, that guy, he knocked Gil down hard, basically took his legs away with a shot that was like an arm punch, total arm punch. Point is, a guy that can punch like that against another guy like Frotch, for example, or Chavez Jr., who both have very good chins and can take a lot of punishment and, you know, have crazy styles, those are great fights. And also winning either of those fights, probably more Frotch than Chavez Jr., would both be really good bridges to getting to Andre Ward, which is apparently what a lot of people want to see if Golovkin's not going to be given the opportunity at middleweight.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, it's like, I'm not saying that, like, oh, Golovkin has to go up to 68. I mean, he doesn't. You know, he can dominate 160. He's, you know, in my mind, he's already basically a great fighter. But I just don't know how much more, like, fights like Solomon, fights like, you know, Quillen. If he beats Quillen, it's a good win, but a lot of it, you know, is contingent on what does Quillen do after that. Does he, you know, have a good career? I mean, I think you go, the fight that really propels him into greatness would be Andre Ward. the most makeable fight, you know, that he could actually realistically get done. I think a Frotch fight would be huge. I mean, we all saw the crowd that Frotch drew against George Groves. You know, he's obviously, you know, popular enough in the UK, and if that's a fight that maybe you could even do it on Frotch's home turf to just to get a bigger atmosphere. But, you know, he can continue to dominate middleweight, but I just would like to see the prime version of Golovkin. I think he's in that right now against, you know, another great fighter.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, it's tough to even really factor. I mean, all Andre Ward hate aside, it's tough to even factor him into the conversation, seriously, because his status is unknown. He fought, what was it, like, it was either November or December of last year. Hasn't fought at all this year. There's no plans for him to be fighting. He's in litigation. Yeah, I mean, part of me is, like, you know, silently laughing because I don't like him, really. But then another part of me is like, well, he's the best super middleweight, and to have him inactive like this is kind of disappointing at best. So, yeah, taking away that opportunity is pretty stupid. But in the near future, yeah, if we're looking at greatness, if we're looking at, you know, things like that. Well, and I also forgot to mention earlier, anecdotally, there's all these, like, Jim War type of stories, you know, about Gennady Golovkin getting into it with, like, somebody had said that he was sparring, Sergey Kovalev and getting the better of it. And then, you know, and then there was, like, you know, stories about him sparring with, well, Dougie Fisher posted a link about him seeing Golovkin sparring with Canelo, and Canelo basically ending the, whatever it was, 4 or 6 round sparring session all wobbly and shit. You know, stuff like that. And granted, this was like 5 years ago and Canelo's come blah, blah, blah. Anyway, point is there's other anecdotal evidence too of him doing well against these other world-class type of fighters and also bigger fighters too, because he supposedly spars with light heavyweights and shit. So anyway, a move up, I don't think would really do all that much to affect him negatively as far as size anyway, but we'd have to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all want to see fights that aren't, you know, like, that don't have predetermined outcomes, you know. And, of course, there's always a possibility, you know, anybody can upset Golovkin on any given night. But, you know, it'd be nice to see him in going into a 50-50 type of fight. And, I mean, that's the one drawback to this is, like, you know, this fight won exactly is pretty much the most, you know, optimistic expectations for Golovkin. This fight played out exactly in that fashion, and unfortunately, you know, it just wasn't competitive at all, and it ended with a really early knockout, which, you know, it gave more validation to Golovkin, and I guess, and there were still a few doubters out there, but, you know, it's just time to get into a fight that going into it we don't know, because those are the fights that sell. I mean, those are the fights that we get excited about. You know, it's fights like Canelo and Lara, or even with an unsatisfying conclusion, you know, going into it, it was basically a 50-50 fight, and the opinions were totally split. And until Golovkin gets into a fight like that, I think he's going to be stalling for a while now. But, I mean, at the same time, he can get into some fights where he's a big favorite against, you know, the big money guys, and I'm thinking like Canelo, Chavez Jr. types, or Miguel Cotto, and that too will do something for him. But, I mean, those are the types of fights he needs to be targeting. And all these fights are, you know, decent. It's not like he's going to go up and fight Andre Ward, and that'll just be like, you know, on an HBO Boxing After Dark. I mean, that's a huge fight, and it's probably a pay-per-view fight. You know, it's not going to do a million buys, but it's a big fight. So it's time for him to get into a big money fight. I mean, that's my main takeaway here. You know, I love the guy, but I want to see, you know, the true measure of greatness is fighting doing that against an equal and somebody who's, you know, really accomplished themselves and distinguished themselves at the highest level. And that's, to me, the only people in that, you know, the entire range around middleweight that are realistic to happen would be Carl Froch and Andre Ward. And I think if he can somehow get those two fights in the next, you know, year or so, I think that's how he becomes, you know, a genuine superstar.
Well, let me ask you, that actually ties right into what was at least rumored this morning. You know, I haven't consulted with Rick Glaser yet, but supposedly the fight did not, the Golovkin-Gil fight did not do very well, ratings-wise. Now, basically, my response to this on Twitter before the show was, why would really anybody expect it to be doing that well? But, you know, maybe HBO had high hopes or had played it. I don't know. I have no idea. But my point is, like, this, what this is leading to is, where do you think Golovkin is as far as popularity or notoriety, and what type of fight do you think he would need to push him to another level?
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, I think that ultimately I think Ward is the showdown that's going to really propel him, because it's a combination of, it's not like you beat a popular guy and then you become a popular guy, you know. A lot of it is, you know, beating great fighters, and that's how you know, and endearing yourself to fans that way. But first, you know, I want to say that, like, I think the ratings thing is just total nonsense. I don't think HBO cared. I don't think there was some devastating blow to HBO that the fight did whatever it did, 900 and something thousand at the peak, you know. I think the ratings are totally overanalyzed. There's so many ways people watch these things these days, whether it's, like, on a replay or a diff, you know, whatever, and the ratings don't measure all of that stuff. And, you know, it's like boxing matches have been doing anywhere from, you know, I mean, the Showtime numbers are even lower, but have been doing like 800,000, 900,000 to maybe like 1.5 million on the Nielsens for the highest fights. I think Cotto and Chavez Jr., when they were on the regular network, did 1.5 million. You know, but I just don't think, I think that the whole thing, it's not a measure of like popularity. I mean, it's, I guess it is to a small extent, but we, you know, nobody was expecting, like, it's not like, you know, 3 million viewers tuned in and it doubled the regular rating. I mean, it's in line with a lot of the boxing shows that they've had. So, I mean, Golovkin, I think attendance was really impressive. You know, 8,500 people at Madison Square Garden, and I'm sure having that, you know, the MSG, you know, promoting the fight with them and kind of putting that out there probably helped. But I think, dude, the simple thing is this. Just real quick, like,
go ahead.
I think here's the path. Take a big money fight, ideally against Chavez Jr. or Froch. Froch is a proven draw in England. Chavez Jr. has been on pay-per-view, did really well against Martinez. His fans will come out big if he fights a guy like Golovkin. You take a fight like that, and then you take a fight with a genuinely great fighter like Andre Ward. And I think that's to me, that's the move.
Well, I mean, I think that there's no question that moving up to super middleweight, for example, and beating it, I think Froch would be pretty big as far as popularity goes, or at least a push, because Froch is, you know, at least relatively well-received a lot of the time, not all the time, but he's pretty popular, and he has, in that matchup, he would probably have most of the British, backing. But yes, going in that direction would definitely drive up his popularity. I think that if he were able to get a fight with Canelo or Cotto, those two fights, as I was like kind of tweeting to, Matthew Mojica, Fight Source. I was tweeting him because he asked if I thought that a Canelo or Cotto fight would really push him in terms of popularity. I think that would too. But as far as his popularity now goes, I agree. Getting about 8,000, 8,500 at Madison Square Garden, that's good. It's not great, but looking at all these things in context, it helps. You know, he doesn't really have a big ethnic backing. He's not Puerto Rican. He's not Mexican.
Exactly.
You know, and he was also in against an opponent that is not very well known in the U.S., and so, you know, we had this kind of mini discussion about this earlier before the show. But anyway, yeah, looking at all these things in context. Oh, and also Jay Caspian King, he wrote an article about the fight for the New Yorker that was forwarded on to me on Facebook that I thought was pretty good. And also, you know, it touched on those kind of ethnicity type of issues. And he talked about like the basically the small pockets of Kazakhstani, I guess it would be, communities in New York, and, you know, them trying to kind of play to that, and supposedly there were a pretty nice showing in that regard. Anyway, so, you know, there are a lot of different dynamics to this, and also like you were saying, the ratings and things like that, they don't speak to the buzz on social media that happened after the fight. You know, I mean, I didn't really see anything trending or whatever, but regardless, among the boxing fans, we knew. We knew what the fuck happened.
Yeah. I saw, it was trending on Twitter.
Oh, see, I wasn't really, you know, paying super close attention, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, and, you know, the highlights were on Deadspin, they're on ESPN. I mean, people are becoming more and more aware of him. I mean, yeah, of course, you know, the Canelo and Cotto fights would boost his profile, and I think that if they played out in the way that most of us would predict, which is that he would probably knock both guys out, I mean, the thing is, like, it's no disrespect to Cotto, but he's much smaller, and he's just past his prime, and he's been fragile. And I think a guy like Golovkin really hurts him badly and stops him. I mean, Canelo has shown a pretty tough chin, you know, the last couple of years. He had that one incident against Cotto's brother. But, you know, so that's a harder fight to predict. I mean, I don't like to say that a guy will get stopped if he's never been stopped before. Maybe Canelo can, you know, box smartly and not take that much punishment. I mean, I think he beats both guys and probably looks spectacular doing it. So, yeah, those help him, but I just don't know how realistic those are, you know. I think it's more likely if he were to go to 68, take those big fights, and I'm not saying he'd be huge overnight, but I think he'd just keep getting bigger and bigger, and then maybe whoever emerges at middleweight, maybe Canelo beats Cotto or Canelo beats Peter Quillin and Canelo gets better and continues, you know, his ascent as a star. Maybe Golovkin's profile then is big enough that the fight makes sense economically, and it's a really huge fight, you know. But for now, I just don't see those guys. You know, it's not with the risk rewards, just not there. I mean, Cotto's team basically already said as much. I mean, I think Canelo might be crazy enough to try to do it, but at the same time, he's saying that he wants to stay at 154, which he hasn't even made in the last couple fights, and you know, he's saying that. I mean, who knows? And if the fight with Cotto is there, it doesn't make sense for either of those two guys to try to fight Golovkin.
Yeah, it just really doesn't. And that's it's kind of sucks. I mean, basically that's the only option Golovkin has left, is either building up his name and knocking everyone out or moving to 168. And if he does the latter, actually, of course, now we have a second question, if you don't mind. Matthew, yeah. Mojica asked, what about Abraham or Kessler? Would that move the needle as a first fight at 168 pounds? What do you think?
Well, I mean, probably, but, you know, neither guy, I mean, is Kessler still fighting? Did he have a fight after the last Frosch fight? I just can't remember. I know Abraham's had a little
bit. He seems to be teetering on the edge of retirement at, like, just about any moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, Abraham was a good measuring stick, but basically every good super middleweight beat him a few years ago. Or at least, you know, Durrell was ahead in Frotch and Ward. I don't know. I mean, what about somebody, like, just to throw a crazy... It wouldn't do anything for his profile, but what about somebody like Saki Obika? I mean, that would be a nice introduction to the, you know, 168-pound.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
Well,
to be honest, man, I think he's ready to just jump right into a fight with a guy like Frotch. I mean, specifically
Frotch.
I didn't even say a guy like Frotch, because there really isn't another Frotch. You know, I think he's ready to just jump right in there with the second-best guy at 168. Either Frotch, or I think Chavez makes more sense, obviously, as a big money fight. But the other thing about Chavez is he's so big, and he can take a ridiculous amount of punishment, and he's a really kind of in the ring. He's just a crazy, you know, a pretty active fighter. So I think that would actually be a really interesting fight to see, you know, what happens when Golovkin fights a guy who can take his punch and is throwing a lot back.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chavez is a decent puncher, too, and he's just so big that I think it gives him a shot there to at least, you know, disrupt Golovkin a bit. And I think that's an interesting matchup. But, you know, obviously probably the key would be somebody who's really quick and, you know, a great boxer would be another interesting fight. Like, it's too bad that Mayweather-Golovkin will never really make sense. And, of course, like, Mayweather is very small, I mean, compared to Golovkin. But I mean, stylistically, if the sizes and maybe their primes and their popularities just matched up a little bit more, I mean, that would be a great fight.
Yeah, I mean, if Golovkin really could make 154 pounds, I don't really see it as that crazy of a matchup or whatever. But regardless, yeah, once they actually got into the ring, we would probably see that Golovkin's a good, you know, like 15 pounds heavier or something like that, and the power difference would be huge. And Golovkin would land eventually. But, yeah, it's frustrating to see all of the options for a guy like that be so shriveled. You know, I wish we could see, anyway, at least he's staying busy. He's already talking about getting back into the ring in October.
Oh, nice. You know, man, I can totally see, like, let's just say that Froch Chavez Jr. fight happens, which I totally love on its own. I mean, I really can see Golovkin getting a shot at the winner of that. I don't think that's necessarily out of his range economically. Because, you know, what will be the big fight for the winner of that fight? I mean, I think Froch has more options because, you know, the Gale fight would be huge in England. And you know, he can always do a third fight with Kessler just because of they've had the history. But, what's the option for the guy, second best guy at 168, Andre Ward? I mean, that's not really an easy fight, you know. So those guys may look down at Golovkin as another big guy. I mean, in terms of economics, he's right behind. I mean, he's not on the level with Cotto or Canelo, but he is on the same level with Andre Ward, I think.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, even like you name-dropped Saki Obika earlier, but for Golovkin, I wouldn't even go near that. I mean, Saki Obika's got a fight. What's his name?
What would be a good trap fight for? You know what I mean? Like, what would be the trap fight that, like, takes it 168 and maybe he'd have his hands a little bit full? I mean, I think Golovkin beats Saki Obika, but Obika's obviously not an easy fight for anybody.
Yeah, and he's just a rough dude that's going to go in there and basically try to foul the shit out of him and headbutt him and all that type of shit. So if I were Golovkin, I would just even stay away from that one and try to have a quicker path to, like, a Froch or a Ward or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, there's no question that or at least there's no question to me that I want to see more of him. I want to see him knock more guys out or get knocked out trying to knock the dude out. I mean, that seems to be the only option in the future that, you know, that's going to come with a Golovkin fight. Ever since he's risen to any type of prominence that I've known, I mean, I didn't know when he had initially gotten the, whatever it was, vacant, regular, double WBA, whatever the fuck it is. I didn't know who he was. And then I had initially caught on when he fought Kasim Muma. And when I watched that, you know, that was actually not a super great showing for him. And I was like, all right, well, he looks strong as hell, but Kasim Uma's old and kind of, you know, did fairly well early on. What's going on? But then when I had seen him after that, it was just like knockout, 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 knockout. Holy shit, this guy's kind of scary. We want to see more of him. There's no question. So hopefully we get to see more. And like I said, they're talking about bringing him back already in October against like Sturm, Soliman, somebody like that. And that's, yeah. That's big. Artie, you know,
he's
jumping right back
in. He's great for boxing. You know, he really is. And that's why I think that he deserves to be at the, you know, center stage in some big fights. And, I mean, I think he's going to get there. It's just a matter of, you know, how much time and who and what weight class. But, you know, it's like business. It's all about leverage. I mean, I was talking to Glazer about this the other night. You know, it's you need to have your economic... No, but, you know, it's like those guys get to call all the shots, like Cotto, Canelo, Floyd.
Was that
like the money guy gets to call their shots?
Was that when you had the three-way cell phone convo with Glazer and Heyman?
Yeah. Well, Glazer and I were both applying for that job with Al Heyman's boxing company, so it was like a conference call job interview thing.
Well, it was the three most powerful guys in sports right there.
Just boxing, not sports.
Oh, well, the three kings, anyway, of boxing.
Yes.
Well, all right, well, speaking of fucking kings, Brian Jennings, that guy is a king, not at all. He's not a king, actually. That was a pretty lame showing by both Brian Jennings and Mike Perez. It was a little disappointing, man.
Definitely disappointing, you know, but... And it was just one of those fights where every time it looked like it was going to start to get a little bit better, it just kind of, the action just kind of fizzled out. But, I mean, I definitely came away with more, I mean, I don't want to use the word respect, but, you know, I definitely, like, at least Brian Jennings was late in the second half of the fight, making more of an effort and really trying to, you know, win the fight, I thought. And, you know, I know the point deduction thing was kind of bogus, but I actually thought Jennings, I wasn't really scoring it really that closely. I mean, Perez was good early, and I thought was up maybe like three or four rounds early, but, you know, at the end of it, I didn't really care who won, and I was happy that it was Jennings just because I thought he was making an effort, at least trying, but it definitely exposed a lot of, I think, the deficiencies because, you know, Mike Perez was basically just completely outboxing him in a really boring style and, you know, the least active way he could possibly do it. And, you know, you just imagine a better fighter would have been able to continue that. I mean, look at Perez just totally ran out of gas. And but, you know, Perez is a good fighter. I mean, it's not like Jennings was fighting a total scrub or anything like that, but I think that this is kind of like slowed down the, you know, the Jennings train a little bit. But at the same time, though, everybody's like, well, Deontay Wilder has like 31 knockouts and 31 fights. Well, I don't think he's even fought anybody as good as Mike Perez. I mean, he fought, what was the dude in his last fight? But Malik Scott. But, you know, that,
yeah.
I don't know. I have questions about, like, how good was Scott, and he'd just been knocked out by Chisora, even though it was a bad count in that fight. Still, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Perez is the tough opponent and whatever. I mean, Jennings is always going to have a hard time. I mean, he took up boxing really late. He doesn't have, like, the amateur pedigree. You know, he's going to be technically rougher. He's a little bit smaller for a heavyweight. I mean, he's just never been somebody who could realistically compete with the Klitschkos, but it doesn't, you know, it was a bad showing. I mean, it sucks because I like Jennings. I like his story. I think he seems like a good guy and everything, you know, and this was an opportunity to, you know, Perez was in a really good fight against Abdusalamov. I mean, that was a brutal, brutal fight, obviously, and Perez was really active the entire time and threw a lot of punches, and I don't know if it's like the after effects of what tragedy that happened that day or what. I mean, he hasn't looked good. He didn't look good against Takam in his last fight. He just was completely out of gas and inactive in the second half of this fight. And I know he just switched trainers, but, you know, it against an opponent like that, I mean, I don't know. You're just – Jennings doesn't have that gear to really have turned it up, I guess, and, like, stopped him. And, you know, Jennings landed a lot of good punches. And maybe – and I think Perez has showed in the Abdusalamov fight. He's a tough dude. He can take a punch. He's got a good chin. But, you know, yeah, overall, not great for anyone involved, especially the viewers.
I mean, you know, I probably should have known better than to show any sort of, like, interest or enthusiasm going into a heavyweight fight. I mean, you know, if you value your life, your brain cells, your ability to procreate, your sanity, dignity, integrity, will to live, just don't even give, like, one-third of a shit about heavyweight fights, you know? Okay, maybe that's going overboard, but, like, maybe not. Because the fight just wasn't really worth the small amount of action it delivered. You know, every so often they opened up and it was like on the brink of getting good, but mostly it was like posing, fainting, Perez grabbing, Jennings being okay with it, and then occasionally punching on the inside. If you break it down, it was pretty easy. It was like Perez early, Jennings in the middle round, and then Perez late, but with a point deduction that was probably bullshit and at the wrong time. But, you know, it was a heavyweight fight. Sort of like, you know, some fights involving like Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, maybe like Derek Chisora or something. Just the division's like not interesting, you know. I was really, I don't know. I saw this fight going in and was like, this is, I don't know, this is something that could get pretty interesting, and it was just like, eh. It was bullshit.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like eventually Klitschko's going to be done, and the heavyweight division will always have some interest for people, and, you know, it's like these guys were two good heavyweights. I mean, they're top 20 at worst, and both undefeated, and both seemingly having a lot to gain from moving forward and, you know, looking really good and looking impressive, and neither guy did that. I think it was more – I'm more frustrated with Perez, I guess, because I felt like he showed early. I mean, he had the skills – to have done better than that, you know, and I think Jennings tried his best, but just wasn't effective, you know, as much as he could have been, I guess, or he should have, you know, we wanted him to be if we were looking for Jennings to be, you know, the American heavyweight hope.
Yeah, it just, and that is a good point, though. That is a good point that, like, you know, Perez had more ability of the two, and that said, like, a deeper bag of tricks or whatever to be able to make the fight better or to, you know, capitalize better or whatever you want to call it. And so in some ways, Brian Jennings basically did do about all he could do. But, yeah, it was just – it wasn't good, dude. You know, and I think that we expected more, and not just more action-wise, but, yeah, more from both guys as far as being sold what type of skills they have or where they're – who they're supposed to be or, you know, where they're supposed to go, you know, stuff like that. Because we heard the phrase even during the fight a couple different times referring to Brian Jennings as, you know, in the running for best American heavyweight and shit like that. Every time one of them fights, every time any remotely even close to undefeated or something like that American heavyweight fights, they're like, is this the next best American heavyweight? And they need to make it into a fucking reality show on CBS just to hear the dude's voice. Is this the next best American? You know, it's like a fucking catchphrase now. It's stupid. There aren't any American heavyweights, people. Come on.
At this rate, Tony Thompson will be the best American heavyweight until he's like 60.
Fucking hip.
I don't know, man. It's just, you know, you get these matchups and it's like, you're on the big stage. You know, you're on HBO. You're on the undercard. You're at Madison Square Garden. You know, 9,000 people. Two undefeated fighters. You know, we want to see somebody step up and really seize the moment. And it just didn't happen. I mean, Perez boxed well early, but even then it was... Not a great fight. It wasn't gonna. Had he just done that for 10 rounds, I mean, maybe it would have revealed more about Jennings than about Perez. You know, I mean, it wasn't a star-making performance either way. And then he just totally gasped. And you know, Jennings did what he could or tried to do what he could, but it just wasn't enough to leave a real impression. I mean, personally, I had no problem with the decision. I mean, I thought Jennings, if anyone, I thought Jennings deserved to win the fight. There could have been a draw, but, you know, it was disappointing. I mean, and that's, again, it's like, I don't know. You know, I feel like HBO, they do these, and I know that Golden Boy has a really deep stable, but it's like those cards when they have four fights on it, and there's cards, you know, shows on the Extreme Channel or whatever. It's like, something good is going to happen. You know, you're going to get, but these HBO shows, like, we get this dreadful heavyweight fight, and then the Golovkin fight lasts, like, 5 minutes.
It just, it seems, when I write out, like, you know, I pre-write out, like, tweets and shit like that before the show. Last week, I had a few, you know, basically making fun of HBO for getting interested in the heavyweights again, but I was like, nah, you know what, I won't use those, and I didn't. But now I'm like, why are they trying to get invested in the heavyweight division again when a couple of years ago they said themselves, they're like, dude, we're done. We're done with the heavyweights because, you know, I think a big part of it was that Vladimir Klitschko fights just don't tend to be very good. And, you know, that's who they were showcasing more or less were the Klitschkos. But, yeah, this pretty much proves it. Just let's leave them alone. Okay? James,
I've admitted before, I'm not a huge fan of the, like, extreme low weight classes. But at the same time, and I do like the heavyweights, you know, I mean, I do, but... it's just ridiculous that there are these incredible, I mean, there's a lot of talent in the lower weight divisions now at, you know, sub-bantamweight, like flyweight, and they could make those fights happen for, you know, reasonable cost, and they're like guaranteed action fights against like genuinely really good fighters, and instead, you know, we get stuff like this, and it just seems like, you know, what am I missing here?
Yeah, there's no reason for this. So, you know, whatever. Motherfucking heavyweights, man. Well, let's move on to next weekend then to at least a couple of fighters. And, you know, the matchups might not be good. They might be, who knows. But at the very least, it's two fighters that, you know, we know what we're going to get out of them. And it's not going to be heavyweight type of bullshit. Brandon Rios, well, shit, I guess I should even start out, just in case. earlier today, I mean, it sounds like Diego Chavez, Brandon Rios' opponent, he might not be able to get a visa to enter the U.S., and it's kind of like still up in the air. And as of now, I guess we'll just preview the fight as is. But I read a blurb on Fight News that said a younger fighter named Jose Cepeda, you know, that's solid but probably not quite on that level yet, could step in. So in any event, yeah, Brandon Rios, Diego Chavez, it seems kind of like the theme or the consensus going in is, you know, hey, Diego Chavez, he looked decent in losing to Keith Thurman that time, and Rios is a dipshit, so close fight. That kind of seems like how it's going, right? I mean, it's probably flawed logic if you look at it that way, but it actually could wind up being a close fight for a few different reasons, you know. What do you think?
I really was hoping that fight would happen because I think that, you know, Chavez is obviously a much tougher opponent than Cepeda, but, you know, who knows? I mean, I honestly had favored Rios in the original fight with Chavez just because I don't, a lot of people have talked Chavez up and he's like, you know, the dark horse welterweight or whatever. I mean, I've never seen him fight until the Keith Thurman fight. And looking through his resume, I mean, he did have that second round KO of Ismael El-Masoudi, but, you know,
Ismael.
I mean, who had he ever fought before Keith Thurman? Nobody, really. So, and he got knocked out by Keith Thurman. So I just didn't understand why everyone was, like, on his train to begin with, and then also, you know, predicting that he was, I mean, I think he's going to have size against Rios, maybe, but, you know, Rios is a tough fighter, man, and he's good. And even if he's a little bit, I think the key is Rios may be damaged because he's had some brutal fights, and he's coming off of, you know, a 12-round drubbing to Pacquiao. But if these guys are anything close to, you know, 100%, I'm going with Rios all day because he's proven tough, you know, and he's been in tough with guys, and he's fought elite opponents. He's beaten some really good fighters. He's beaten guys better than anyone. I mean, I think Keith Thurman may have a very bright future, but to this point, you know, Rios has better wins on his record than, you know, even had Chavez beaten Keith Thurman. But he didn't. He was knocked out, you know, so I don't know. I just think that I favored Rios in that fight, and I was really looking forward to seeing how it would play out because I do think that it was going to be guaranteed fireworks. You know, I think Chavez, we saw against Thurman, I mean, he's not gun-shy. He'd get right in there. We know how Rios fights. I do think it would be a total war of attrition. But if it ends up being Cepeda, I mean, you look at his resume, and again, he's, you know, he's undefeated, but he's pretty much unknown. He's fought out of Mexico, hasn't fought really any notable opponents. And he's also, you notice his last couple fights, I think, were at 135. So, you know, I don't know what to expect with that, but I think Rios obviously have a much easier night, and maybe he deserves it. You know, I mean, the dude's been in a ton of tough fights, and, you know, even putting him against a big welterweight like Chavez, who had, you know, banged with Keith Thurman for 9 or 10 rounds, I mean, that's a tough fight. I favor Rios, like I said, but, you know, I think he's going to have to go through a lot of stuff to win it. So, I don't know, man. It's disappointing that the visa shit, I mean, like, how does that not get worked out well in advance and this is still up in the air, like, 4 days before the fight?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and tap into my wife's Mexican resources again. But because I actually do know a little bit about the whole visa situation. But regardless, I think that one of the reasons is that the guys who take care of it basically figure that they have X amount of time to get it done. And what happened was there's some type of glitch or there's some type of issue with GOES, which is one of like, and also like customs, which helps issue the visas. And so there's some type of computer issue or glitch or some shits with that they haven't been able to get worked out. And they're not just going to be like, oh, well, it's our fuck-up, so just go on through. They're going to be like, no, it's our fuck-up, so you basically just have to sit there. So that's, as I understand it, that's pretty much the issue. That's why he hasn't been able to get a visa, that it's not because somebody waited too long, but that because there's some type of issue, you know. But as far as the fight goes, you know, first, I think Brandon Rios fighting above 140 pounds as far as, like, effect is kind of questionable. I mean, we saw him get battered by Pacquiao for a bunch of rounds, and that's pretty much it, you know. And stepping in with any competent fighter that has that's fought a few times at, like, you know, 154 would be a challenge, but, you know, that's Chavez. Chavez has fought above 147 pounds a couple times, but then, you know, add in potential style issues like Rios maybe not fighting well going backwards, and if the fight comes to that, you know, it could be intriguing. But again, you know, pile on Rios' layoff ever since the Pacquiao fight, the drama stemming from hiring and then firing Alex Ariza, testing positive, you know, and then while we're at it, you know, the fact that Rios hasn't had a fight, literally, and I mean, I had to go be all up on BoxRec to fucking add this all up and everything, but Rios hasn't had a fight that hasn't had some type of, like, drama or difficulty or something since, like, 2010. You know, I mean, like, going down the list really quickly, he was rocked by Miguel Acosta in the fight where he won his belt. You know, it was a really good fight, but he was rocked pretty good. He damn near killed himself making weight against Urbano Antillon. He couldn't make weight against Murray, you know, and he got pulled by Richard Abril, but given a gift. You know, he went to war with Alvarado twice and then got his ass kicked by Pacquiao. That's going back to 2010. Like, he hasn't had a fight that's like seven fights or something. He hasn't had a fight in a long time that didn't come with some type of, like, shit. You know what I mean? Like, even back to the fucking Anthony Peterson fight, that shit had drama in it too. So, you know, touched on it, but, like, that all this type of stuff wears on a dude. You know, the getting beaten up, the going through the weight issues, all this type of shit wears on a dude, and then stepping into a division that, you know, he maybe doesn't belong in. I don't know. I mean, I'm not outright picking Chavez if they do wind up fighting, but it's like, I don't know, man. I just wonder how much longer Brandon Rios can do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a brawl. It's not going to be, you know, he's not going to cleanly outpoint him and never get hit, you know. Like, that's just not how he fights. And I agree. I mean, the cumulative damage, I think it already probably has slowed him down a little bit. And honestly, I mean, like, you know, he doesn't sound great. After the Pacquiao fight, just his voice is, you know, there's maybe some signs that, yeah, Rios has taken a lot of punishment. But he is a durable, you know, I mean, he just... I don't know, man. It's going to be a war, and he's fighting a guy who doesn't have a win on any significant kind of level. I'm still going to kind of give Rios the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you know, he broke Mike Alvarado in that first fight. You know, the Pacquiao thing, Pacquiao's got elite speed and boxing skill. And, it's a terrible matchup for Rios. I mean, Rios is not on that level, you know. And like you said, he's not even really a welterweight. He's never done anything in the welterweight division. I don't look at that fight as a blueprint for what Diego Chavez can do, because he's not Manny Pacquiao. Even, you know, an older version who easily outboxed Rios for 12 rounds. You know, I think it's going to turn into the same type of brawl we've seen before, and, you know, I'm going to go with Rios over a guy that the last time I saw him was stopped in a tough fight. You know, I think Rios has had kind of underrated punching power, and inside, I mean, he takes a lot of punches. No one would ever confuse him for a defensive master or anything like that, but I do think there's some craft in what Rios does, and that he does a better job of kind of muffling and avoiding punches than people give him credit for. So, to me, it's like Chavez wins the fight if Rios is just so shop-worn that, you know, he just literally can't defend himself at all.
And that seems to be one of the big, you know, asterisks for a lot of people going into this fight. I mean, that, you know, they're all the weight and all that type of stuff, but there's a lot of, like, not predictable factors on Chavez's side, because not a lot of people know much about him. But then, you know, stepping back and going with what we know with Rios, there are question marks there about whether or not he's going to be, you know, up to the task physically. But yeah, you are right though. You are right with the Pacquiao point, because yes, it's not as if, Diego Chavez is like a Pacquiao clone or anything like that. And there aren't, and even a faded Pacquiao or whatever, if we agree he is, there still aren't a whole lot of guys with that blend of, you know, kind of just speedy, explosive offense as Pacquiao even now. So, yeah, there, you know, that's a fair point, too. It just it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder for sure about whether or not Rios is, just had too much or what. I don't know. And also there is, you know, the, I guess if you want to call it somewhat anecdotal evidence about him liking to party, too, in the off time. So, anyway,
cool.
He does blow up quite a bit.
No, I mean, I like Rios as a person. I mean, like everyone else, I kind of immediately had some distaste for him because pretty early, you know, as he was coming up, there was the infamous, like, video with where he was mocking Freddie Roach's Parkinson's and all that stuff. And so I kind of put him in the Margarito, you know, scoundrel camp. But he kind of endeared himself to me over, like, you know, through the years. And I think he's a decent dude at heart, you know, so I don't want to – Rios isn't a guy that I'm rooting to just take, you know, all this absurd punishment and end up, you know, in a vegetable in 25 years. So, yeah, I mean, there are concerns about, you know, how many more of these tough fights can this guy go through? But at the same time,
well,
you know, this is what he does. And it's, you know.
It's interesting you bring the whole, you know, Freddie Roach thing up because, you know, I thought that was pretty fucking low rent. Myself, you know, when I saw the video of that, I was like, dude, come on, you know, and it was even lower to be like, no, I wasn't making fun of his Parkinson's. I was, you know, like, I don't even remember what the excuse was, but I was like, dude, just own that shit, you know, but I will say this, you know, even though I thought that shit was dirty and I really didn't like it, I'd have to say that Brandon Rios has probably, you know, paid in blood ever since then. And it was kind of like Antonio Margarito with the hand wrap shit. It was like that dude, like Shane Mosley played the fucking judge, jury, and executioner that night on that shit. I'm not saying it wasn't bad, and yes, I'm still a fucking bitter former Margarito fan over the whole hand wrap thing. But as far as like having to pay the price, that dude got the absolute shit kicked out of him that night. And it was like, you know, he paid the price right that fucking night.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And what he did, obviously, was a lot worse than what Rios did. I mean, I think a lot of people make – I mean, look at fuck half the people we follow on Twitter, dude. You know, I mean, like, tasteless comments all and, you know, shit like that all the time. And it's just, you know
– I do.
Rios is not – I mean, look at who Rios is. I mean, that's just who he is. And,
yeah.
And I don't think there was any bad intention from it. I think he's just – was ignorant of the fact that it was a really offensive thing to do. And I just thought it was pretty cool, though, when he, you know, like the scenes in 24/7 where he went, they showed him going in, you know, he was in New York City for the first time, and they showed him with his family. And, you know, I don't think he's necessarily the villain that he was kind of, you know, on his way to becoming a couple years ago.
No, for sure.
But do I think that he's, you know, going to be a factor? I mean, obviously not at welterweight. And maybe not in any division because I think he can beat guys like Chavez. I'm not going to favor Rios, you know. I mean, he would have to look a lot better than he has in his last couple fights, I think, against a genuine guy. But, you know, as tough as Rios is and as many punches, and I think some of the performance against Pacquiao is overblown. I mean, with Pacquiao's like in-out movement and his hand speed and all that, it's like Rios had no chance in a fight like that. And the second Alvarado fight, you know, Alvarado, that was like the best performance of his career. I mean, he was inspired. And it was still a war, and Rios had him hurt at one point. You know, and it wasn't a blowout. I mean, it was like a 7-5, 8-4 fight for Alvarado. So he's still been competitive on a pretty high level. And, you know, as much as I say, I don't think Rios can be competitive. You know, I don't think Rios is going to be the lineal champion at, you know, 140 pounds or 147 pounds. You know, is Rios a tougher fight than Rod Salka for Danny Garcia? Yeah. Fuck yeah, he is. So, you know, he could still be in some good fights, but
bro,
it's just
Lightning Rod. Come on.
Well, you know. it's just that Rios, he arouses those concerns, like the humanistic concerns of any boxing fan.
Yeah.
You see a guy getting punched in the head so much. You hear a guy's speech kind of not sound, you know, be a little shaky after a couple really tough fights. And, you know, it's like it's not just some anonymous dude on an undercard somewhere that we never see interviewed. You know, he's front and center, and you see him on 24/7. You see his family. You know, so it's like we don't, you know, that's the dilemma here is, like, is his style. But, you know, there's guys who are, the only thing is, like, you can always point at guys who it's like, well, that dude was in, like, you know, tons of brawls, and he fought till he was, like, 40, and now he's, like, 80 years old, and he's fine, you know. So there's always exceptions to the rule, but most fighters who fight like that burn out very quickly, or if they just have some superhuman capability, you know, or ability to, like, absorb punishment, even if they can have, like, a relatively long career, oftentimes they end up having pretty serious problems after boxing, you know, and I'm not just talking about, like, the obvious, you know, Parkinson's or speech. I mean, a lot of these guys end up really in dark, dark places, and you can look through history at examples of that.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's a concern, but that's really, that's for his, you know, that's for Brandon and his family and his advice. I mean, that's for really for them to decide. I mean, because, you know, it's his job. This is how he makes money. This is how he puts food on the table. So
yeah,
if he's, as long as he's going to fight, we have to be, you know, we have to kind of watch it and, you know, commentate on it, I guess, as long as we're doing a radio show.
Well, we'll see how much longer that is, you know, once all the execs start really listening in. But who am I kidding? They're never going to fucking listen in. But well, you know, I not to get too psychological or existential on the shit here, but it does kind of make me wonder sometimes with guys like Brandon Rios, for example, who, you know, and I'm not trying to be derogatory at all towards the guy because I'm a fan, but he doesn't come off as particularly intelligent. He's not, you know, educated in a way that he could step away from boxing and just find a career, you know, lickety-split. But he's the type of guy that, you know, probably doesn't manage his money that well, you know, takes a lot of punches, and probably is not going to end up in a real great place after boxing, you know, if we're just going by the odds here. It's nothing against him. That's just what it is. But that in itself kind of makes me wonder sometimes if that ever ties into why we root for certain characters or maybe even against certain characters. You know, that kind of like that just, you know, fatal destiny or whatever you want to call it, that just kind of, you know, these guys that are destined to be squished by the reality of boxing. You know what I mean? It makes, I don't know, like I said, not to get too fucking philosophical, but it does make me wonder.
I'm with you. You know, the only thing that I think maybe gives some hope, I don't know if you're right, though, that he spends a lot of money because, or at least not from what I, like, have learned, and I'm obviously not an expert. I don't hang out, I'm not part of his entourage or anything, but there was that scene in 24/7 where they were all busting on him for being real stingy and, like, not buying expensive shit. So if there's one, you know, hope, maybe he has been smart. I mean, he's made a lot of money, made a million or a couple few million against Pacquiao. So ideally, you know, if he is smart, he
you know,
shouldn't have to be.
Like I said, it's not me, like, you know, like pointing and laughing. I really hope he has done well for himself because so few fighters do. You know, it's just for whatever reason, or at the very least, he doesn't come off like a dude who's super responsible with money and, you know, just, like, life. So, anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's pretty clear, but at the same time, you know, there may, I mean, like, to me, I actually think Rios, you know, you could say that he's, like, street smart. I mean, I don't think he's a complete moron, to be honest with you. I think he's, seeing him in interviews and seeing him in different situations, I think he's hopefully smart enough to, and it looks like he's got a good family situation, and he's, you know, got Robert Garcia watching his back, so I'd say the future's bright.
Yeah, well, dude, you know, as long as, I don't know, as long as we get, I don't know, Alex Ariza as his fucking parent kid's godfather, so I don't know. I was trying to find a joke there. There's nothing there. What's your if they do wind up fighting Chavez and Rios, what's your prediction then?
My official pick is like Rios late TKO.
All right. I think that's fair.
Could be crazy. I don't know.
No, I think that's fair. I think, and you know what, though? And I think that if they do wind up fighting, too, now, at this point, look, we're at Tuesday. They're fighting Saturday. If Chavez hasn't gotten into the fucking country at this point, that's probably going to affect him psychologically. So, in any event, you know, yeah, that also kind of has to be looked at, too. And at this point, if the fight goes forward, you might need to, you know, tip a little bit of a hat towards Rios in that regard as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Proven brawler, proven tough guy, and ridiculous chin against... And I know Thurman's a big puncher, but I don't know, man. It's just like, you know, these type of fights, I go with like the more known commodity.
That's fair. I think that's fair. But, yeah, and you know, when you stack all of these things up, I think that that's fair, too, and it's also logical. So, I don't know. I would probably just kind of lean towards Rios. I would like to just pick Chavez outright because I want to be all like, you know, he hung with a bigger dude, you know, at a higher weight, a guy that's looking legit. But, yeah, we don't know yet. And so going with the known is probably safe to go with Rios, or, well, safer anyway.
Well, you know, there are known unknowns.
That's right. Well, you know, the boxing is like 75% physical and then 113% mental. That was a quote by Crusher Kovalev, Sergey Kovalev, who's also fighting on that card. It probably wasn't a quote by him, but in any event, he was voted last year.
Translated.
The Queensbury. Well, he was voted last year the Queensbury Rules Radio guy that we'd most let bang our wife. So that's important. That's not the type of award that you take lightly, really, or, you know, shouldn't be anyway. But
I don't think he's going to repeat that award after what Golovkin showed us, especially with the nose mole.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. This coming year, that award's really up for grabs, I'm going to have to say. But as of now...
Why had no one noticed that nose mole before, or had people? I had never noticed that before. And then when he's interviewed, it's always the other side of his face. So I wonder if that's not an intentional thing. But, you know, Golovkin's a handsome man, but if he keeps making this kind of money, that might want to just zap that thing.
That's what I'm saying. Why not? Strive for perfection.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest key to his crossover success.
Yeah, I mean, dude, you get that thing removed and it's just like, snap, instantaneous superstar. But I don't know, you know, it really does hinge on that that award at the end of the year. So there's still time. And as of now, Kovalev is the reigning, you know, fuck my wife champion. So he's taking on
Caparello. Yeah, Madonna's in the mix.
Madonna's definitely in the mix. And it all, hey, if Madonna keeps it close with Mayweather again, that's pretty big. So we'll have to see about that. But, you know, Blake Caparello is what stands between Crusher Kovalev and greatness right now. So what's going to happen, James Foley?
Well, obviously Kovalev's going to knock him out in, you know, the early rounds. That's kind of what I'm foreseeing here. Anybody else going with any other prediction?
No.
I don't know, dude. 19 and 0, 6 knockouts.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Blake Caparello's picking Kovalev by knockout, too.
Yeah.
Well, dude, when they announced the fight, my first thought was, I don't know anything about Blake Caparello. And I don't even know that he knows anything about Blake Caparello, but I'm not even sure that Blake Caparello is a real person. You know, they might just go in there and do like the Tupac hologram thing. and have Kovalev do that. We don't know. For all we know, Victor Conti's involved too. But, you know, seriously, I went and I looked at his record, and then I realized that I had indeed seen him because his last two fights were against Alan Green and Elver Mariki. And I remember the Mariki fight because Mariki, I don't know, I just remember it because Teddy Atlas trained the dude a handful of years ago, and he had a fun fight that was like multiple knockdowns against like this kind of unknown journeyman type of guy in Friday night fights. Anyway, point is, he's just like an awkward Aussie dude.
Alan Green.
Yeah, he's just, he's not like unskilled, but he's just kind of like this awkward, he's this dude from Australia. He's awkward. He kind of like darts in, darts out, has an odd rhythm, throws a lot of like looping, like southpaw, like left hand, stuff like that. He moves a lot too, so I guess it could wind up being kind of like the Cedric Agnew fight, in that Kovalev has like, you know, some difficulty landing consistently, like Agnew kind of just shut him down, you know what I mean, like just went defensive. But apart from that, nothing that I've seen or heard about it or anything, Blake Caparello just doesn't have anything that's going to stop Sergey Kovalev from like surging forward and just throwing punches and knocking him out, really. I don't know, could I be wrong? Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all about that. It's a pretty dreadful fight, and it's, you know, I know they had the TV date and everything, and I don't know exactly what I don't know much about the boxing business, but, you know, like, it just seemed like Farfaro was a possibility to fight Kovalev, and he asked for, like, another month or two to recover from the Stevenson fight, and main events just proceeded with Kovalev Caparello here because they already had the TV date, and it's just kind of a waste. I mean, I'm happy to see Kovalev, I guess, but... you know, it's like, again, like, nobody expects this fight to be competitive. I mean, the only fight on the card that was really even intriguing at all was the Chavez fight. What's the third fight? There is another fight, right? Actually, the other fight might be good.
Is there?
I can't remember what it was. Yeah, there's a third one. I'll pop it up here. But, you know, it's just these type of fights are just getting, you know, it's like, dude, we've seen him destroy Cleverly and Campillo, who are both, like, top-ranked light heavyweights. Now, I know he's in the same kind of the same position Golovkin is, but even lower profile, and just can't get a big fight. And from what I read, Farfaro, who was coming off a pretty, you know, impressive, unexpected, you know, unexpectedly competitive performance against Stevenson, was down to fight Kovalev, and HBO, you know, would have put up some money for that. But then we get
that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, and I get it. You know, I get that main events like had the date, and they just kind of like couldn't let it go, and. You know, I understand, but at the same time, fuck, man. You know, it was just such a huge letdown that Stevenson versus Kovalev didn't happen, obviously. I mean, that was like that was like the talk of the fucking town when that shit didn't happen for like, you know, a couple weeks, because people were just pissed about it, because it looked like a fight that, you know, I mean, not to start naming names and shit, but there have been a handful of fights over the last few years that we were like, either close to getting or really wanted, and then just didn't wind up happening because of that fucking divergence between those bunch of assholes. But, you know, it looked like this was a fight where it was like, all right, everybody wants it. They both hit hard. They're going to come in. It's going to end in knockout. Fuck yeah. And then at the last minute, it was like, nah, sign with Al Haymon. Not going to happen. So that type of, like, disappointment now is kind of just, like, carrying forward, I think, with both guys, where we're like, all right, dude, if you're not going to fight each other, then, like, make some other huge shit happen, because it's horrible. You know, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, we were talking
Stevenson
about Golovkin Ward earlier, but what's that?
Well, Stevenson can, because he's got Hopkins over there. You know, so, I mean, if Stevenson-Hopkins is a pretty big fight. I mean, that's not, you know, it's nothing to scoff at. It's not Stevenson-Kovalev, but, you know, a lot of people have Hopkins ranked the next best light heavyweight behind Stevenson, so... That's a big fight. So, I mean, he's okay. And then you got John Pascal. Kovalev is the one who, you know, I think really is going to suffer from this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't the whole landscape at 175 pounds is like, that's one of the most confusing ones in all of the sport, really. I mean, because you have, when you start talking about, like, the lineal champion and then, like, who guys think is the best, and, you know, it's kind of like the middleweight landscape, but, man, that's just like a microcosm for all the frustration that fans feel of the type of shit that goes on in boxing. Anyway, yeah, we should basically be expecting Sergey Kovalev to mow right through Blake Caparello in any event. I mean, trying to bring it back to there, I guess. But, yeah, there's no question in my mind that Sergey Kovalev is going to mow right through this dude. And from there on, I don't really know exactly what route main events is going to go, because in this case, there's not really anywhere for Sergey Kovalev to go. Moving up to cruiserweight just, like, isn't even really an option.
That's one big fight, you know, because Fanfara has drawn big crowds in Chicago. He got the same number of people. I heard anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 at the White Sox Stadium last year against Gabe Campillo. So similar type of number to Golovkin. I'm not saying Fanfara is going to become this next boxing superstar, but, you know, he has a rabid Polish fan base here. You could get a big kind of event type of atmosphere. And because he just, gave Adonis Stevenson the toughest fight he's had since he became the, you know, lineal champ, that's a great fight for Kovalev. You know, you get a big atmosphere, and you can prove that have a performance that people will compare to Stevenson to kind of build up more momentum and more demand for that fight. Because if Kovalev can go out there and just knock Fanfara out in a couple rounds after Stevenson couldn't put him away and ended up, you know, getting dropped late in that fight and hurt, I think that makes a big statement. But you're right. Beyond that, I don't really see a whole lot. And a lot of that's my own bias, just because I've been dying for Kovalev. You know, I just, honestly, I want to shake Kovalev's hand, so I'd love for him to come to my own city. But, I do think that's actually a big fight, because I think Fanfara impressed a lot of people, and you know, nobody thought he was going to last against Stevenson. I mean, and he took Stevenson's best shots and stayed on his feet the whole 12 rounds. So I think that's a big fight for him. Outside of that, I mean, there's some up-and-coming light heavyweights, and maybe they can kind of do some stuff. But, yeah, the one that everybody's going to want to see is Kovalev against, assuming that Stevenson beats Bernard Hopkins, if that fight happens, that's obviously the fight that people want to see. And if it can't happen because of politics, then yeah, he's going to be in a pretty shitty situation.
Yeah, there aren't going to be too many places for him to go. Although you are right though, because we have talked about the kind of, you know, slightly untapped potential of Chicago as a, you know, a staging ground for a few, you know, serious fights. Hell, I even name dropped Spielka, your boy Spielka, last week, Mr. Fucking, you know, tuxedo panties.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah, that dude's he's pretty much a pimp, motherfucking PIMP. But
hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, that there actually is, you're right, there actually is, I think, I totally forgot about that, but I think there is kind of some potential for a couple bucks at that fight if they were to, you know, hey, like they did with that, a couple of those Friday Night Fights cards where they just, you know, got a few Polish fighters that had, you know, even just moderate followings in Chicago and put them all on one card, and, you know, you can draw a nice little chunk of people. So,
dude,
yeah, I think that's also an option, too.
You got to just put Spielka Malo on every card. Spielka Malo 3, Spielka Malo 4. I mean, it'll always end in the same way. But, you know, I think that should be a staple of, like, all Chicago boxing cards. And then, yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, and I mean, obviously I'm biased. You know, I was there. I'm from here. I'd love to see big fights here and everything like that. But even watching back, I mean, I think that it was really cool how they did the fight at the baseball stadium last year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought it had a really good atmosphere on TV. I think it translated well, that there was a good crowd, that people were into it.
Yeah.
And against a real world – I mean, Campillo was a good fighter. I think he's obviously past it at this point. But to me, Kovalev is – he does have a bigger fan base among, you know, the real hardcore boxing fans. They know who that guy is. And you combine that with, you know, the huge Polish turnout that will come to every Fanfara fight. I mean, Fanfara against Tommy Carpency did like 4,000, 5,000 people at UIC. he's, you know, the guy has a big fan base here. And I think, you know, putting a fight like that back at the stadium, like, they're doing a fight in August, another fight at U.S. Cellular Field, and the headliner is it's Donovan George, and I forget who he's fighting. And, you know, I like George, and he's a good Chicago guy, and he's a good fighter, but a fight like Fanfan and Kovalev, I mean, that's a legitimate fight. You know, that's two of the top guys, Kovalev, obviously, and Fanfan showed that he belongs in kind of, you know, right beneath the top guys at light heavyweight. So it's a legitimate fight, but yeah, man, I hate to see it happen, but I hate to see Kovalev end up in that same boat, and it just sucks with the Cold War, but I think it's great. I love that he called out. Obviously, we both were huge fans of him calling Stevenson a pussy on HBO, and there's no question that Stevenson's aware of Kovalev, Hopkins is aware of Kovalev, you know, it's not like he's totally off the radar. And so I think with all the smack talking and maybe fans pressuring and things like that, yeah, maybe not by next year, he can get into some bigger stuff.
Yeah, I hope so, you know, because there isn't anywhere else for him to go, and he's a guy I would like to see kind of in the mix. You know, I've grown so fucking tired of Bernard Hopkins, and I just don't even want to, like, ever see him again. At the same time, if we could get him in with Sergey Kovalev, yeah, I would definitely
awesome.
Watch the hell out of that and just basically be praying the entire time that Kovalev just totally decapitates him.
The day that Bernard Hopkins gets knocked out will be like when you're done. I'm done with boxing. I've seen it. I've seen everything I wanted to see.
Yeah, I don't even know that Bernard Hopkins would let anybody knock him out. Like, he'd go out like on a foul or some shit like that rather than get knocked out, I think. Seriously, I'm being, like, dead fucking serious, but anyway.
Well, sometimes you can't really help it if you hit with a big punch. But, I mean, I know the guys, you know, Hopkins always had a great chin and great defense, but...
It can't last forever anyway. But yeah, I would like to see Kovalev in that mix, and so hopefully, in the next year or so, whatever.
Good thing, though, is that, like, in Kovalev's case, it's not like Golovkin where you're trying to get in a pool with, like, the biggest guys in the sport, like Canelo and Cotto. You know, like, Kovalev's got, like, Stevenson is getting more popular in Canada. He's not huge. I mean, he's not even on the level of, like, Lucien Boutte or Jean Pascal. You know, he's getting more popular. Hopkins has never been a huge mega draw. He's got a big name. So, you know, it's not inconceivable that, I mean, how many more fights can Stevenson take if he fights Hopkins, beats him? There's not that much out there for him either, you know. So this we may end up seeing happen.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of places for anybody to go. But, you know, I think that it would be easier to shut Kovalev out on that side than vice versa anyway. Well, especially since I think that recently he just renewed his contract with HBO too, which would put him on for another like four fights or something like that. So, yeah, the likelihood of him going over to Showtime or working with Showtime would be pretty small. But regardless, I don't know if you saw, but I wanted to kind of switch gears, if you don't mind, to something more positive. So I had initially kind of like seen rumors, and now it seems like they're both finalized, but it sounds like Roman Gonzalez versus Higashi and Juan Francisco Estrada versus Giovanni Segura are both finalized for, I think, September 6th and 7th, respectively. So, I just wanted to give praise.
I thought you were going to tell me they were on the same card.
No.
That wasn't it.
Well, I just wanted to give thanks and give praise to the flyweight division for delivering. Because, you know, that is one deep-ass division. And it's so, you know, this is, all right, I'm going to step into purist mode for a second here. But this is one of those things that does get overlooked. And it's unfortunate they get overlooked because... It's a division that, you know, even my dad, for example, my dad is, you know, coming up on 70 years old. This dude went to, Muhammad Ali versus Ken Norton 1 here in San Diego and back when, you know, everybody was a boxing fan, basically. And if I invite him to fight cards, he basically goes, are heavyweights fighting? And if I say no, he doesn't really want to go. you know, and like the lower down the rung that I get, like the less interest he shows. You know, and it doesn't matter, because if you go to a fight card, and if you've ever been to a fight card, you know that there's nothing like guaranteed. There's nothing, you know, different last minute replacements could come in. And then there's always like, you know, it's not like there's all middleweight fights on one fight card. You know, it's every whatever division. Anyway, point is, throughout the card, he'll be like, you know, well, what did they say these guys are? These guys, junior featherweight. What the fuck, junior featherweights? Where are the heavyweights? You know, shit like that. And so the point is that, like, flyweights, divisions down there, they get overlooked really easily. And it sucks because there are a lot of good fights and right now a lot of good fighters in that division. Right there, those four right there are four of the top maybe five or six fighters in the whole division. So that's pretty huge. Guys like Cliff Rold, for example, are guys that are always, you know, championing the flyweights. Dougie Fisher, again, you know, these are guys that are always, you know, sticking up and kind of like voicing, you know, being vocal about these lower weight divisions and trying to just kind of convince people in general that these guys deserve to be on television, should be on television, you know?
Yeah. And I respect that. I mean, and it's, well, I think what often happens, I don't know. I've never been a huge fan, and some of that is because you're right. Like, they're not showcased on television as much, but you do often get great fighters emerging from those weight classes and making classic fights. You know, and obviously that's happened. And right now, you know, Roman Gonzalez has just become one of the most exciting fighters in the entire sport, and is really building a legacy of just and leaving total destruction in his wake. So he is an awesome guy to look forward to. Estrada has looked really good in his last couple fights. He looked good against Gonzalez. He lost the decision to Gonzalez, and since then he, you know, beat for Brian Valoria. I mean, he looked really good, and they're all action, you know. And these guys are so small; they throw tons of punches, and the fights generally turn out to be just all action fights. And the guys who can mix in skill and power, like Gonzalez, you know, can attain real greatness. So, yeah, it's good to see. I mean, these are both good fights, for sure. You know, Yagashi is the lineal champion. And, you know, it's good to see Gonzalez getting a crack at that because it's another legacy builder for him. And I think eventually this hopefully builds up towards the Gonzalez-Estrada rematch. Segura was, you know, a super hot fighter a few years ago when he beat Calderon, right? Twice. And, you know, first when Calderon was undefeated, and Segura was even creeping up on pound-for-pound lists and stuff, and I think he was always probably more of a, you know, a brawler type who just benefited from Calderon being a little bit past his prime. But that said, I mean, he's in exciting fights. He's a big puncher for the division. I favor Estrada because Segura's, you know, he's getting older, but they're great fights, man, and it's great to see that. But, you know, a fight like Gonzalez, like, should they both win, especially in really spectacular fashion, a fight like Gonzalez and Estrada, the rematch, that's the type of fight that should be opening up on HBO. And the thing is, historically, like, part of the reason why these divisions have been, in my mind, weaker is because there's been less money. The lower you go, the lower weights that you go, there's less money. There's less money from TV. Mm-hmm. There's usually smaller fan bases. Now, they're huge in different parts of the world. There's parts of Mexico where the flyweights are huge. There's part, you know, Asia is known for it. But so because there's more money, a lot of the good, better fighters end up moving up and fighting at bantamweight and fight, you know. So it's like, I just feel like I've had this argument before. I don't want to, like, offend anybody. You know, I'm not an expert on the flyweight division. I've just always felt like there's been richer talent as you move up to, like, light featherweight, lightweight, welterweight, whatever. But right now, yeah, the division's really hot. There's some really good fighters. And, you know, this is the type of – because of the fact that, like, there's not that much money there, how much would HBO have to shell out to get Gonzalez and Estrada on its airwaves? Like, give them each $100,000 or something? I mean, it's nothing compared to the money they're spending on so much other crap that we see.
Yeah, and I mean, you know – I kind of did I did write an article for Queensbury Rules before that fight card that had it was Brian Valoria versus Tyson Marquez and Gonzalez versus Estrada. And I mean, I say it pretty much every time I bring up this fight card because it bears repeating, but that was seriously top to bottom the best fight card that I'd seen in a long time and probably since too. It had like six televised fights, all of which were fucking good. And so anyway, point is, I'm glad you brought that up though, the rematch up, because that was going to be like my next, basically segue or next, question or whatever was if they both win, and they probably both should be favored to win, if they both win, that rematch, at least as far as flyweight rematches go, should be pretty big. I mean, Estrada, he looked very good against a guy who comparatively had a lot more experience and a guy who's a feared puncher, and he looked pretty good in that fight. And then, has gone on to do better things and obviously become much better as a fighter and is an exciting guy, too. And so, that going into that, you're right. I do wish that there were a little bit more money for these guys. I mean, who was it that what was his name? Michael Carbajal. He was the first guy at, I think it was 108 pounds, freaking junior flyweight, to get $1 million purse in, like, it was like 1993 or 1994. How many, a century of boxing had gone by before a guy that was below a featherweight had gotten more than $1 million for a purse, even after, purses had, inflated and blown up so much. Regardless, the point is that, yeah, there's no money. There's no money for these guys to all be unifying and all this type of shit. When Valeria Marquez happened, I wrote an article before that. That's what I started out saying about how it was damn near 50 years in the making because two belts at flyweight had not been unified in almost 50 years. And I mean, I kind of got some shit from Tim Starks a little bit when I wrote the article. Not that, like, he was mad or anything like that, but, we had a discussion about it because he was like, well, it sucks to see somebody like place emphasis on the belt. And I was like, well, in this case, that's kind of all we have to go on. It's not like I'm trying to say that, I love the belts or anything like that. But in this case, like, this is really all we have because there's no money for anything else to really happen. And that's why it's so infrequent that the belts get, like cross paths and things like that, because there's no money. There's no incentive for these guys to venture past, like, regional kind of like reigns, Anyway,
as far as kind of a perfect storm for fights like that to have, Carbajal, Gonzalez. I mean, just building the popularity and making that into such a huge fight, and obviously the fights being great, turning that, making those $1 million purses in that weight class, it's almost unheard of, And it would be surprising, I guess, to think that, but you look at fighters like Gonzalez and Estrada, and what is Estrada, like 23 or something like that?
Yeah, he's still young, man.
Even Gonzalez is pretty young, isn't he? So
he's only like 27 or something. Like, neither of them are old, and,
Yeah, so it seems like the type of fights that, the division right now has a couple fighters who could potentially, bring the, put the spotlight on that division.
Yeah. And there are other guys kind of lingering around in that division too, but, even just these two guys, these two significant fights in the span of 2 days is pretty good, or at least I would say for guys like, for example, our buddy Cliff Rold, who was on the show before, and guys like myself who love this shit, it's Christmas, that shit's Hanukkah, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's nice to see a little bit of showcase for the flyweights in any event. But speaking of rematches, we got into it a little bit last week, or I did with Mr. Janoski, but Floyd versus Maidana rematch, Glovegate 2014, fucking Glovegate.
I don't know. It doesn't really matter to me. Like you said, I could fucking wouldn't know the difference between the two gloves anyway. So, look, I don't know, man. I'm not really concerned about that. I mean, I think that I'm looking forward to the fight. The glove thing is just kind of a sideshow. Bottom line is, like, you know, Floyd's in the position where he can dictate all the terms, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't really seem to get the issue myself. I mean, basically it comes down to, I don't know, maybe Floyd really is worried about the gloves will hurt him or something. I mean, I kind of find that difficult to believe, but I think that it's more Floyd just basically, you know, exerting his control or his power over Maidana and saying, well, look, I'm the boss, dude. There you go. Case closed.
Yeah, it's entirely what it is, man.
So, I don't know. But, I mean, have you, as we stay up at night thinking about this fight again, have your thoughts on it changed or anything like that? You know, has anything happened, or I don't know. I mean, not a whole lot has happened for the promotion.
Man.
It almost feels like the promotion hasn't even gotten started, but has anything changed? Have you got any different type of outlooks or thoughts for this fight?
No. I think that I expect a pretty similar fight to the first fight, to be honest. I don't think it's going to be a Floyd shutout because I just don't think he has the legs to really do that for 12 rounds. And I think that, you know, Maidana is going to be aggressive and throw a lot of punches again and try to, you know, continue what the good things he was doing the first fight. But I think, you know, you have to give Floyd the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's a great boxer, and I think he probably, again, is going to figure, you know, once he gets into rhythm and warms up 4 or 5 rounds in, I think he'll take over and you know, dictate the rest of the fight. I'm interested to see it again, you know, for sure, man. I mean, first fight was a good fight, and that's kind of all we can really ask for with Mayweather fights. And if you've noticed, you know, most of his recent fights have been good. I mean, the Guerrero fight wasn't great, and the Canelo fight was horrible, but the Maidana fight was good, the Cotto fight was good, the Ortiz fight was pretty good until that, you know, and the ending was great. So I think that this is natural what happens, you know, with a great boxer like Mayweather. He's getting older,
yeah.
He's slowed down a little bit. He has to, you know, stand his ground more and throw more punches and kind of like, you know, and he's done that. So entertainment value, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't really when you start adding all of these things together, and, you know, we talked about this before, but there just aren't very many available options for Floyd Mayweather. And I said this last week, but I think that that's one of the big reasons why they went with the Maidana rematch. It wasn't because Floyd felt any, you know, sort of like obligation or justice or any type of shit. Like, come on, dude, Floyd Mayweather. It's because they needed a prepackaged promotion that they didn't have to, like, you know, invent with like 2.5 months until the fight, when normally they have much longer than that. I mean, especially if Floyd is generally fighting in May and September, you know what I mean? From September to May, it's a much longer time to contemplate opponents and like come up with some type of fucking promotion. So in any event, I think that that's one of the big reasons why they went through with the fight. But even past that, you know, action wise, there's no problem. What's the problem? It was a pretty good fight. You know, any type of controversy aside, the fight was entertaining. It was a good fight. So what's the fucking problem making it twice again? As far as who's going to win and, you know, predictions and stuff like that, again, like I said last week, my big question is Floyd's legs and whether or not he's going to be worn at all from that first fight because, you know, he doesn't really take punishment in general. And so then when he takes any, it makes me kind of wonder, you know, like how much of a toll is this taking on him? So there is kind of, I think, some question or at least some type of, you know, little gap to maneuver, you know, a potential Maidana win there. But overall, it seems the consensus is that Floyd's going to do a better job the second time than he did the first, which, you know, that's a fair prediction, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I think you're, you know, anybody picking Floyd to lose is probably reaching a little bit. I mean, I think the only reason to have ever really picked against Floyd, especially in the last few years, is maybe just taking the shot that, you know, the man's 35, 36 years old. He's eventually a fighter has to age. I mean, I can understand maybe some people who picked Canelo. I mean, I thought Canelo would give him a better fight. I wouldn't have actually outright predicted him to win. But, you know, and you just, until he looks, you know, I think, you just don't think anyone can really predict he's going to lose unless he fought, like, a really elite guy, which there's no one else really around there who's in that category except for Pacquiao, and that's not going to happen. You know, the only thing that's going to really beat Mayweather, I think, is age at this point. And, I mean, it's happened to every other fighter, so I think eventually it probably will happen to Floyd if he continues to fight.
Yeah, and obviously it's going to happen, you know, and it, when he signed the Showtime deal, it said that there were 6 fights. Although, you know, I highly doubt there's not some type of rule or something like that or some type of clause in the contract which basically just says that he can be like, fuck this, I'm out at any time. So, you know, it's Floyd Mayweather. I highly doubt he's, you know, roping himself into like some long-term contract. Because he doesn't have to do that. He's not going to do that. So, you know, he probably is going to be around for at least a couple more fights. And sooner or later, there's going to be some significant drop-off. There's already kind of been a drop-off, at least most of us think. But there's going to be a significant drop-off at some point, just because there has to be. Whether or not it's going to be now, and whether or not Marcos Maidana is going to be able to capitalize on it, you know. There are a couple of different stories, but... at the very least, you know, going into the fight, I think Marcos Maidana has a pretty good, you know, a pretty good foundation as far as what he needs to do, and also a good, you know, support, a good, like, you know, support section, good cheering section going in, given that he gave a very good effort in the first fight and, you know, came a lot closer than most guys do against Floyd Mayweather. So, at the very least, all of these things, I think, make it at least somewhat intriguing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think a guy like Sean Porter, if that fight ever gets made, Mayweather and Porter, and Mayweather continues to look, you know, great, but is having tough fights with guys like Maidana, Porter's somebody that I could maybe get behind and predict an upset there, you know, because I think he does some of what Maidana does in terms of aggression, but it's much more controlled and it's more, he's quicker. He's, you know, I think that that's a big thing, too, with Maidana's speed. I think late in the fight, Floyd, you know, he's got such an advantage in terms of, like, hand speed and stuff that once he was able to kind of, you know, figure out. I think some of it was Maidana slowed down. Floyd was just warming up, and then he just took over the fight. But I think he's going to, you know, if he fights, I mean, we've criticized Floyd in the past for his level of opposition or whatever, but, you know, if he continues and fights guys like Maidana, Thurman, Porter, I mean, I don't think any of those are easy fights, considering that Mayweather is 36 years old or 37 years old, you know, I mean, and I think that he deserves credit for winning those fights. Even Maidana, who we've seen Maidana beaten before, we know he's not like an elite beat talent or anything like that, but he's a tough fighter, and, you know, and I think he's looked inspired in his last two fights. I mean, against Broner and against Floyd, he just came out and really did what he needed to do, and that's, you know, like, win or lose, that's why we love guys like Marcos Maidana. I mean, he got on that big stage, and he really made the most of his opportunities, you know, I mean, he went out there and just attacked him with, and that's why Maidana won those early rounds against Mayweather. He wasn't even connecting that cleanly, but it's just you have to disrupt him and get him on his back foot, and, you know, and make him have to adjust. Now, he did do that, because Floyd's a great fighter, but Maidana had absolutely the right strategy. And I think somebody like, you know, we talked before about how maybe Maidana, because he's not as predictable, because the punches are coming from every, you know, half of them are coming from over his head and, you know, do crazy roundhouses, some of that probably actually benefits him against Mayweather because it's so, you know, atypical to what he's used to dealing with that it probably took him a while to kind of, you know, he's such a master of defense and timing, and when you have a guy throwing from all these crazy angles, I definitely think it disrupts him early. You know, but at the same time, I mean, a guy like Porter with his speed and strength and you know, if he could keep up a high activity rate against Mayweather, I mean, I actually would like his chances. You know, I wouldn't pick him to win, but I think he'd be a real threat.
Well, you know, I think that there were, and I don't want this to come off like a friggin', you know, weird, like, conspiracy theory here or some shit, but, you know, I think that there are a couple of guys that they were hoping, and they being, you know, I don't know, maybe it was previously Golden Boy, but now it's Heyman or whoever else is handling Floyd Mayweather, but there are a couple of guys that they were kind of hoping would be maybe slightly farther along by now. Like, you know, I think that they were hoping Danny Garcia would be able to fill in this fall for in that role, but then, you know, he struggled mightily, if not lost outright to Mauricio Herrera. You know, and then so now Danny Garcia is fucking around with Rod Salka, and so and then there's Keith Thurman, who there was nothing wrong with Keith Thurman. There were no slip-ups or anything, but maybe perhaps they thought he might be a little bit farther along at this point and would be able to be a viable opponent for Floyd Mayweather, which at this particular juncture right now, I don't think he is. And then, you know, Sean Porter, it's kind of the same boat. At least he's got, I think, a belt now, or doesn't he have a belt now? I don't know. I just can't follow these things. Regardless, I don't think he's quite far
away. Yeah.
I can't even, I can't even keep track of it anymore. But the point is, I don't think he's quite far along enough either. So, I mean,
not in popularity, but I mean, you know, I mean, the guy just destroyed Paul Malignaggi, who, you know, I know it's Malignaggi, but, you know, look at Broner Malignaggi, look at Maidana Broner. I mean, it's, you know, he's not, he hasn't done that much less than what Maidana did to get the Mayweather fight. So,
no,
you know, I think
I don't think that, like, I'm not just like, you know, putting my foot down and saying he's unqualified, but I don't think he's quite there yet where, you know, he would be a believable opponent as far as, you know, people thinking he would win anyway, at least with Maidana.
Well,
I even said before the first Maidana fight that I thought that he had a decent chance because of his weird style, but regardless, my larger point was that I feel like they had a handful of guys potentially lined up that just didn't, like, get there yet. And so now this is why we're getting the Maidana rematch, or at least one of the reasons.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see, had Floyd shut out Maidana, what would have happened now. You know, I mean, because he would have had to fight somebody. So, I don't want to dredge it up again, but, you know, you're talking about, like, nobody's really qualified except for Manny Pacquiao. You know, the guy's like, I mean, that's the only guy who's, like, on anything close to a level of popularity and achievement. I mean, aside from Marquez, we've already seen that, and he just lost his last fight. You know, Bradley lost the pack. I mean, it's clearly still the best fight you could make in that, if it was possible. And it's honestly, man, I don't think any. I'm not sure another fight does over a million buys until that happens.
Well, is it?
But, you know, it's just, you talk, because everybody's going to be unqualified. Nobody's had a 10-year, you know, 15-year championship run, or world, you know, the world titleist and a, you know, bona fide Hall of Famer. Nobody is on the same level with him, except for the guy who's number two in that weight class right now.
Well, since you brought it up, since you dropped the name, I just wanted to confirm, are you going to be joining Bandcamp if Chris Algieri beats Pacquiao?
Is Algieri in Bandcamp?
I don't know.
Man,
a solemn vow you might be able to take.
It would rank among, like, the most devastating experiences I would ever have as a boxing fan if that guy beats fucking Pacquiao. I mean, you know, nothing against him. I mean, I was actually impressed because I thought that, fuck, I thought he would eat a toe tag when Ruslan was done with him. So, you know, great job coming back in that fight, and he definitely outboxed Provodnikov in large stretches of it. I mean, I scored the fight for Ruslan, but Algieri definitely exceeded my expectations. But, no, I mean, I don't see any chance that he beats Pacquiao. You know, even – I think he's going to be a little bit maybe tougher than some people are giving him credit for, and I guess I don't hate that fight. I mean, he proved something. There's not that many guys who can go on even terms with Provodnikov, but nah, man, we're just wasting time here, you know, and we keep talking about this, but it's like, it's all right now. Showtime Goldboy just has a deeper stable, because, like, I'm fine with Mayweather Maidana right now. I'm fine with Mayweather Thurman, Mayweather Porter, whatever. Pacquiao's running out of options now. Like, who's he gonna fight? I mean, he doesn't have anybody. Just like Kovalev, just like Golovkin. So it's like, on the HBO side of the street here, they did a great job matching all their welterweights. And I obviously Pacquiao Marquez has been a great rivalry forever. But, you know, we threw Tim Bradley in there and Provodnikov. I mean, they basically all fought each other. But you know, I think these numbers for the Algeri fight on the heel of all these pay-per-views and the fact that nobody's really knows who Algeri is, even though he's a marketable opponent, you know, translation, white, but, you know, he's whatever, you know, but, this isn't going to be a big number fight. I mean, this fight will be lucky to do 400,000 buys, which is, like, less than half of what Pacquiao's been doing for years. Pacquiao was over a million for, like, five fights in a row. So that to me, the Pacquiao franchise, you know, we've already seen Mayweather's numbers down pretty significantly. I think Pacquiao's he's also going to be in a bad, pretty tough position. And the only real big money fight is the fifth Marquez one, and Marquez, I don't think, wants it. So, he had a pretty ridiculous financial demand. So, you know, if that's off the table, I mean, I don't know what else is there for Manny. I mean, he can fight Provodnikov, but Provodnikov is not really known outside of hardcore circles. So, you know, it just might be time for that team to really make some major concessions to try to make a Mayweather fight happen. Because it's still by far the biggest fight for Mayweather, but, you know, Mayweather can still do 800, 900, and he's got good opponents. We're not going to complain about, you know, undefeated guys like Thurman or Porter. They're both legitimate, really good fighters that, you know, arguably deserve a shot. But, man, I just, you know, I hate to keep bringing it up, but it's like every time we talk about it, I can't avoid it.
Well, and on top of that, I have to say that it's kind of a bad sign, at least to me, that, you know, Chris Algeri seems to come from the Danny Garcia school of fashion. It's kind of stressing me out, to be honest with you.
You're an amazingly charming person, Chris.
I think he means amazingly white.
He's incredibly well-educated.
Yeah, he comes from a good lineage.
It's a tough call, you know. I mean, Algeri, he showed some stuff against Provodnikov. He's not a total scrub. I mean, he earned something, but I think the Pacquiao fight is probably a bridge too far. I think he earned a rematch with Provodnikov. That's what he earned. But unfortunately, he got the decision, so he doesn't need to do that. But,
yeah,
you know. Dude, he looked like he was dead in the first round against Provodnikov. I mean, he just looked like he was done, like it was going to be an early knockout. So I give him a lot of credit for just coming back from that. He's obviously a decent boxer, and he looks like reasonably quick, but I do think he's going to be woefully overmatched against Pacquiao. And I'm not looking forward to that, you know, needless to say.
Well, at the very least, I guess we got to see that moment, yeah, when he got hit with the left hook and then got up and it, like, swelled before our eyes. I'd never seen that before. So, at least not in HD, so that was kind of awesome. But,
yeah, that was amazing.
All right, well, we've reached the final minute of our show. I know all about finishing the minute, so in any event.
All right.
I'd just like to say thank you, everybody, for tuning in once again. Sorry about that late start there, but we will be back next week probably to talk about how Kovalev destroyed the dude that he's fighting. Not even going to go through, remember his name right now. Or maybe
and
we'll
Rod
see
Salka,
if Chavez
right?
fights Rios. Who knows? Yeah, Rod Salka, Lightning Rod Salka. That's who it is. Well, in any event, check out James Foley's stuff at badlefthook.com, my stuff at queensberryrules.com, and we'll see everybody next week, all right? Take it easy.